Hello, everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor South Africa, Island of Secrets. I'm your host, Shannon Gates, here to talk about episode 10, a big episode, kind of a sad episode for me where I lost my winner pick and a player I really, really liked in Jeff, but there were so many dynamics to talk about, and we have a great panel to do that. So please first help me in welcoming the Dante to my Jeff. That's the new, very short-lived duo, my amazing co-host, Mike Bloom. Mike, what's up?
I'm happy to be here, Shannon, though I'm more excited to just be able to get in the same room with our guest. It was a long time coming, but he is more delicious looking than a big old pile of nachos and margaritas to boot.
Yes. Okay. Well, we did want this guest on earlier in the season. Some wires got crossed, like literally wires, and it didn't work out. But we're so happy to finally bring in to the Rehap Ups the great PKOS. PK, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey guys, thank you so much for having me, Shannon and Mike. It's very good to be here. I'm so sorry about last time again. It was completely out of my control, but I'm happy to be here today.
We expect the chaos, PK. Yeah, it was completely not your fault, but we're so glad we could get you in to talk about. You have a great episode here to talk about as well, so it all worked out.
And before we get into Island of Secrets, I do want to, you know, check in on the life of PK since Shannon last talked to you after your season, because I know for those of us that follow the Survivor South Africa community pretty closely in the off season, PK, you had a rather interesting interaction with one of your fellow cast members in the months since you were on the season together.
Yeah, I've been a bit busy, you know. I've been like handling some past rivalries, as you could call it, I guess. So what happened is myself and Tom, as you guys remember, we had a little altercation where I promised to deliver him an ass whooping. And basically we organized a charity event where myself and Tom went head to head. You know, we had a fight, went on, I think it went on for about two, three rounds. And then, yeah, I called it off because, man, the guy is big, could hardly get any fists in there, and yeah, he eventually won. But you know, it was a good fight. We raised a lot of money and we did what we had to.
I think we just need to acknowledge how insane this is. Like, this is, we have had, you know, nearly two decades of Survivor PK, and there have been rivalries that have certainly, you know, happened, verbally come to blows on the season. But I swear, never before in my life have those people then said, you know what, let's actually get in the ring together after the season. I'm, you know, it's awesome that you're able to raise money for it, but this is truly ridiculous in every positive sense of the word. I loved hearing about this.
Yeah, you know, some people leave Survivor on Survivor, and then they get on with their lives. I think myself and Tom are like, you know what, let's make this serious. Let's deliver this for the people, and you know, I had to give the people what they wanted, you know, always do. And that's what happened.
This definitely needs to be a thing. Like, now rivals on Survivor every single time need to go duke it out in the ring. Like, how did we not see Russell and Sandra doing that? All of the great rivals of history's past, like, you surpass them now by actually getting in the ring and raising money for charity to do it. Like, I love that that's what came out of the PK Tom rivalry. Amazing.
Absolutely, and I hope certain people follow in our paths. Like, I think Dante told Jeff that he's going to hug him with his fist.
Yeah.
So hopefully once the season is wrapped up, I'll get to see Dante and Jeff get in the ring and maybe do something about the little rivalry of theirs.
Yes. Yes, the official motto of the Dante-Jeff showdown will be,
I'll hug you with my fist, man.
I love the introduction of sound clips.
I love that.
took us 10 episodes, but we finally have sound clips. You know, I think that some people might be saying in response to me, possibly overusing these clips, but you know what? I'm not going to. I'm truly happy with the proliferation of sound clips from this season, and I'm ready to use them at any moment's notice.
You are so lucky that you have Refuse Mikey on hand for you. I want CP to say my name in some sort of catchphrase that I can use.
Well, there still might be time. But I don't know. If a family member comes out named Shannon that Jacques steals away to see his wife, then maybe we'll get some Shannon clips in there.
It might just happen. Fingers crossed, eh, Shannon?
Yeah, well, I mean, PK, you say that you want Dante and Jeff to get in the ring, but Dante was one of only two people in this episode to loyally vote with Jeff, even though Jeff was entirely too happy to throw Dante under the bus. So maybe the fight will happen, but I'm so happy to have you on to talk about this episode because I was getting a little bit of deja vu, I'm not going to lie, watching Jeff appeal to the larger alliance, try to find a crack in this, like, unmovable block. I was, like, getting huge PK vibes. So I feel like it's really pertinent that you're here to talk about how to break up a really big alliance, what to do in that situation when you're working against this like unmovable force. So we'll definitely talk about it. But before we do that, I'd love to get your thoughts on the current season, which players you're liking and disliking, and what you think of it overall.
I do think Jeffrey Lee found himself in quite a predicament, and I'm calling it the Rob's dynasty because Rob literally, he is the king and he has all these pieces that are moving at his will. And it is frustrating me because, you know, I have a problem with the powers that be, all these two, and I'm just hoping somebody does something about it. But just to give you, my thoughts on the season, I'm thinking it's quite a good season so far, you know. Like, some of the people that have stuck out for me is, I'm enjoying Quibbers and his sass. He's such a sassy queen. Like, like some of the things that Quibbers says, is just, I'm really enjoying him. His character is amazing. And Mike, I think Mike is not really, he's not really familiar with Survivor. Like, I think he also made it known that he's not a super fan, but his energy, the way he's so chill, the way he's actually playing such a good social game, like, I'm really enjoying him. And obviously the people that know what they're doing, like, I was enjoying Jeff, just like you, Shannon. I was hoping Jeff really gets really far, and Jock as well. Jock let me down when he played his idol the first time. I think it was episode 7, when Jock falsely played his idol.
It was all the way back in episode 3. I know that they've forgotten about it, but it seems like we haven't. But yeah, I totally, it's been an up and down journey for Jacques, so I could see where you're coming from with that.
Man, episode 3, damn, that was a long time ago then.
He can't live it down though.
But yeah, absolutely. Like, it's something that really, I think a lot of people that saw him as a super fan were really let down by his, I don't even know what to call it. I think he really just think, because, you know, sometimes when you're a super fan, you think everybody around you is thinking the way that you're thinking. So I think Jog had this thing where he thought people are thinking the way he's thinking, and he might just be blindsided, you know, and that's probably why he played his idol. But anyway, we'll see what happens with that. And obviously Rob is playing a mighty good game. Rob is playing a very good game. And yeah, so far, those are my standouts, man. Those are the people that I think are doing an absolute awesome job in Survivor right now.
Yeah, I mean, such a good point, as you say, people thinking that people are thinking the way they are. And I think of the great Richard Hatch, I always remember what he said about that in terms of his strategy, where it's an elevated type of gameplay to think about how someone else might think, not how you're thinking. Even if you're a better player than them, even if you're thinking on another level of them, you have to basically bring it down to their level and kind of think into their minds, even with all the flaws. And that's the way to really kind of channel your opponents rather than just kind of channeling your own thoughts and mirroring it back to you. So that's definitely a good point with Jacques. But this episode, I agree, was mostly kind of based around that Rob versus Jeff battle that Rob pretty handily won. Clearly Jeff went home and Rob is like full control. And it was interesting to me because it was from the first second, the first two confessionals of the episode kind of presented that duality as Rob is talking about how the vote was perfect and Jeff was talking about how it was a messy situation for him and people flipped on him and he didn't really know what had happened. So he lost that battle. And Mike, what do you think he kind of did wrong here to lose so handily to Rob?
Yeah, see, that's the thing, is that I have really loved Jeff's insight and his ability to be, you know, super cutthroat throughout the season. But the weird thing about this episode is that I feel like he almost lost because he wasn't cutthroat enough. What really, I feel like his mistakes are sort of two pronged here. I think one is when Dante approaches him and says, you know, hey, Rob's going to get rid of you, let's get rid of Nicole. I think Jeff's refusal to vote out Nicole definitely didn't help him here, considering that he's gonna sort of be in that scrambling mood later on when he goes to Rob. It's to the point where he's like, just give me a name, give me any name. You would think that he'd sort of have that mindset when Dante approached him, but I think he was very picky with not specifically voting out Nicole, when really I don't think he legitimately had, you know, that sort of benefit to be able to say, you know what, like, it's like he was starving, and then he approaches, like, a restaurant, and they're like, you know what, like, I'm good without the salad. You know, I don't need the salad right now. It's like, you're starving, man. You take whatever option you get. And I think the other option is, I think the plan or the pitch he should have made was the one that he did ultimately end up making to Rob, which was for Dante. But honestly, yes, if he had done that like a day or so earlier, or even a few hours earlier, I think we could have seen a different outcome here. I was legitimately surprised. I thought for a hot second, based on what we saw right before Tribal Council, that there was a chance Jeffrey and Rob would put down their arms and vote out Dante together. But I think that Dante, as Rick Devin said last week, you know, he has become more dangerous in this game in losing Merrill and skating by for one more round. And I think that, you know, Jeff not being able to point that out to Rob has made Rob's focus on him even more laser tight. And so I think those were the two major mistakes that Jeff made, where up to this point, I think he's been doing some really interesting things, but I think some pretty big missteps, in my opinion, that I think really led to him going this episode.
I don't actually feel that he had massive missteps for me. Like, I totally see the things that you're saying. For me, there was nothing too terrible about what he was doing. To me, it was more that Rob did so well. Like, Rob in this episode just had so much control. Like, he did so much better than Jeff. And I don't even think Jeff did anything particularly bad. You know, it's not like he, like, really alienated people. Oh, I mean, he did alienate Dante, but Dante was one of the two people who voted with him. So he really just kind of lost that battle of relationships to Rob in every single count. I mean, if you look at the numbers they were fighting over, Doral is someone who Jeff was with at the beginning, who has voted with Jeff. He's now Rob's little spy, which I want to talk about, which is amazing. Nicole is someone who's voted for Jeff. She goes back with Rob. Steffi and Kubis are people he's been on the same tribe with. They're attached to Rob. Jacques, Mike was thinking about bringing in. He's gone with the Miss Vigo connection. And then Mike, obviously, is the main one at the end who also has to go with Rob. So some of these numbers are because Rob has full power and because Jeff could offer them a lot less, so they might as well just kind of go with this big wheel. It's back to the Saula wheel that really flattened Jeff in this episode. But some of it really is just Rob being so magnetic that people want to work with him. We've seen Kubis, you know, we've seen Mike, all of these really individual connections. The fact that he has an idol and he had immunity on top of it, like, he just ran this episode. And for me, it was more that Jeff came second in every single facet rather than he did anything particularly badly. So PK, when you're looking at this dynamic, what did you see in the whole Jeff Rob battle?
Yeah, no, Shannon, I really must agree with everything that you just said over there. I think actually for Rob, it was one of those things that it doesn't matter, like, whatever Jeff said, because right now the people who are ousted, like the people that are coming from the Spit Shakers tribe, you know, the former Taolo tribe, they're like a tight seven right now, you know, and the people that are ousted, the outsides, it was Jeff, it was Dante, and it was Mamba. So for Rob, who is the power who's the main power right now, for Jeff to go to Rob and try to convince him otherwise, it really didn't matter, because the three options was either Jeff going home, Dante going home, or Mamba going home. You know, so for Rob, he has nothing to lose, because he pulled in Doral, he pulled in Nicole, so they're staying. It was either going to be Jeff or it's going to be Dante. Right now, Mamba is, you know, she's just being quiet. She's not really disturbing anybody, not ruffling any feathers. So I don't think she's going to be going home. She was going to be going home. But yeah, for Rob, he had nothing to lose out on. It was either Jeff or Dante. And I think because Jeff organized for Nathan to go home, Rob was more angry at Jeff. So he would want Jeff to go home first instead of Dante. So it was inevitable. Jeff was definitely going to go home this episode. There was no chance he was going to survive this.
Yeah.
Right. And I would say that, you know, I'm not to, you know, to not excuse, you know, Rob at all as someone who didn't do anything this episode. I thought he did some really awesome stuff. And I think the fact that, you know, I think we can definitely talk about the editing behind this episode and as to whether or not Rob is set up for a downfall here, considering how much talk we got from literally everybody about how powerful he is, yet how untouchable he is. I personally still think that Jeff could have done some stuff to maybe stave off this stuff for at least one more vote. Though I do acknowledge, to your point, Shannon, that it was a very tough uphill climb. I also felt pretty bad that, like, he's like, yeah, I mean, we can just vote in the configuration that we voted in last time, when it was very clear how surprised he was that all those people voted with him. Those are not the people that he thought would vote with him. I guess I'm going to do your favorite thing here, Shannon, and go hindsight here. Now, looking back on how everything went, was the choice to vote off Nathan good for Jeff at the end of the day, now that everything is played out?
For me, I actually still think that the Nathan vote, I'm going to stick to my guns here, which is very unlike me, I know. No, I still think that the Nathan vote was the right vote for Jeff, because I think now he fell prey to the Fa'ula wheel. And I think that regardless of when it would have happened, if Nathan was there, he never would have had power in that group, you know, with or without Nathan. So I think that damaging Fa'ula and kind of making a dent in it was probably the best for his overall game and chance to get power. And they were still so powerful that they're still running the game, which is unfortunate. I think that looking back and now looking at that hindsight, really, I do feel that the best way for Jeff to have stayed in the game and to have power was for kind of what Dante was advocating for in this episode. You know, Ta'alo, old Ta'alo, and OG Laomei really did need to come together in this big supergroup. Now, I'm talking in a complete vacuum because these are people who didn't get along. You know, Mike didn't want to work with Rocco, and Dante and Jeff, as we've said, are heading to a boxing ring near you sometime soon. But at the same time, in a complete vacuum, objectively, chess pieces on the board, the only thing that was going to take down the Miss Figos that have now kind of come up, and there's different dynamics in that, but it's all kind of run by the Amigos and OG Fa'ula, the only thing that was going to take that down would be these two groups. So I think that, you know, if Mike didn't take out Rocco and he took out Rob, which is what I advocated for at the time, and if Dante and Jeff weren't at each other's throats, those are the kind of connections that, again, it's hard because those weren't the relationships, but in a perfect world, that's what I think would have worked out. Now, for Mike, I actually think it could work out because it's just a very different path for him. He's now part of, like, he's a cog in Rob's machine. Rob may be headed for a downfall. He could kind of bob and weave within that, have a great social game. I'm not saying that's not a legitimate path to the end for Mike, but I think that if Mike wanted to save Jeff and have power with him, Jeff, and Marba, the way to do that was with Rocco, was with old Ta'alo, and that's just not people they chose to work with. So anything that empowered the Fa'ula wheel for me in the last few episodes, I think, was kind of leading to that, because I just saw the wheel in such complete focus in this episode, just taking out everything in its path. What do you think, DK? Do you think that the Nathan move was egregious from Jeff in hindsight?
Well, I think it was a good move, because, I mean, the only thing that Jeff does know for sure is that Rob and Nathan are very close. So in order for Jeff to kind of like break that whole leverage that Rob has with the whole Rob and Nathan and Steffi being close to them and Cole as well, was to take out Nathan. You know, that'll make him a bit, give him more leverage on the game and more stronghold in the game. So I do commend him for that. It was a very good move. I mean, he didn't know that it's not going to, you know, go according to, he didn't know how much power Rob has and that, you know, merge is going to happen when it happened and that things won't really fall in his way and that Rob will have that much power and if you want to take him out because of the whole Nathan blindside. So yeah, I do think it was a very good move. It was an interesting move and we've needed such moves to happen in the season of Survivor, because, you know, we're not seeing really great moves so far. Like, I'm sorry to say, I'm not seeing such hot tribal councils. Like, the only thing that we're receiving as fans is blindside the tribal. Like, I'm not seeing the tribal where, you know, there's like a idol train or idols are being fired at like a tribal council. Like, we're not seeing such great things happening. So I'm glad that Jeff gave us, the viewers and the fans, something, some hot content, you know?
Well, I'm very intrigued if and hopefully when we talked to Jeff after the season to hear how much he thought he was screwed over by the merge, because I think he said in one of his exit interviews on the MNET website that he's like, I didn't know the merge would come so soon. And it really was a thing of, you know, we spoke about how this was literally the last thing that was going to happen in the pre-merge. And so, of course, is going to sting in Rob's beautiful blue eyes when he sees his closest person has been voted out and that this one guy apparently is like the figurehead behind it, you know, and Rob has this fantastic, Jim Halpert from The Office moment where, you know, he's hugging Jeff after he appeals to him. And Rob just looks straight at the camera, like, can you get a load of this guy, essentially? And I do wonder, you know, had Nathan been voted out in what, episode 8? And then maybe there was one more vote before the merge and maybe they do, you know, heed Nicole's warning and get rid of a Dante or a Meryl before then, if that would have stung less. To Rob, I do feel like, unfortunately, you know, the timing did not help Jeff's reputation when it came onto the Merge Tribe, considering that he was probably public enemy number one from a good portion of people. But on the other hand, you know, as a super fan, I am wondering how he didn't think that there would be a merge at 13, considering how we've done that with bigger casts as of late in the US version.
I'm still so confused as to why they didn't think the merge was coming, because clearly other tribe thought it was coming in that they made the Spitshake 7. So they were like sure it was on the horizon.
He literally said in that interview, he's like, I didn't know the merge was coming. Apparently a lot of other people did, but I didn't. Which, look, I mean, super fan is a very ubiquitous term. Maybe he hasn't studied the seasons as granularly close as someone like Jacques, for instance, to know exactly when each season merged. But I just thought it was a very interesting observation from Jeff to admit himself.
Yeah, I mean, and South Africa is its own beast as well. But I just never understand why the Spitshake 7 like thought they were on the eve of the merge, and the other tribe thought they'd have like multiple tribal councils before they got to the merge. Maybe they were thinking more of season 6. Obviously, it was a smaller cast, but they only merged at 10. I don't know. Short-sightedness there, definitely, and that was, you know, not a great read on that, because that ended up kind of screwing him, as he said in some of his post-game coverage on the Mnet website. But I have to say,
can I say for a hot second, is it Spitshake 7 or Spitshaker?
What is Spitshaker?
Spitshaker is, I think Nico called it Spitshakers. But guys, I want to ask, right? I want to ask, like, from the few seasons of Survivor that I've seen, and yeah, they're not a lot, but it seems like people always think that merge is coming. I think after there's like 15 people left, 14 people left, you always think merge is coming. Is that not what's been happening?
Well, I think it's just, there's so much variety across the seasons, and I kind of enjoy when they change it up. I mean, like, I think a really classic example is how Chaos Cass was kind of screwed in Cambodia when the merge came way earlier than she thought. And that was actually legit, because that was the first time they'd ever merged at 13. So you could see how she would be confused. She actually really was screwed by that. So, I just don't think here that this was really worth being so surprised. I mean, it's a 21 person cast. I don't think a 13 person merge in the context of global Survivor is really that surprising, especially for Jeff, who we know is a really big fan of the show.
So it's pretty much always going to be a merge between like 13 and 11 people nowadays, and especially with bigger casts, like the US usually cast 20 people now, and they usually do a bigger merge at 13, because that allows for, you know, more crazy dynamics of, hey, if you have more people voting, that means that more votes can get thrown around, which means bigger things can happen. So I think the past couple of votes have shown that maybe with bigger groups, it just allows bigger blocks of people to form, considering that now we have, to Shannon's point, this supermajority of Spitshakers plus Nicole and Dorau as the hangers-on, though I definitely want to talk later about how maybe those two have wormed their way into the alliance and possibly pushed out a couple of other people.
Yeah, well, it's a 9 with a lot of different dynamics, but I have to say that I want to talk about Rob's prospects in the game, and we'll talk about the larger dynamics, but Rob in this episode reminded me of two people so much. Firstly, I'm going to go to International Survivor here, but Matt Hancock in Survivor New Zealand, in an episode where I had to change the Chizzy rules because I didn't feel like anyone else deserved points, and Matt Rogers in the latest Australian Survivor season, because it's like they had an idol, they won immunity.
He's Matt squared.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they had all of this power in terms of what they were winning and finding, and then also controlled every connection, controlled the whole vote. But notably, both of those people then kind of did meet their epic demise soon after. So looking at it here, Mike, do you feel like Rob is really long for the game? Because now he's peaking, and it's quite early.
Is he peaking or PKing?
He's peaking. What is PKing?
I'm going to say that I think right now, and I hope this isn't the case, because I enjoy chaos as much as any PK among us. I feel like the next couple of votes are going to be a little straightforward. PK actually reminds me of the middle game of your season, which I would say is probably the, you know, the lowest point of it, where it really was that, you know, Luzon 3.0 plus Tom just taking out first the Visayas people and then you and Tony. I don't see why the 9 at this point wouldn't just vote out Maba and Dante, just to say like, okay, we're going to get to this point and then sort of assemble their troops. So I feel like Rob is protected. I think Rob's protected at least for the next couple of episodes. And it helps that he's well insulated in that, you know, he has an idol himself. He's in super tight with CP and Nicole, who are sharing an idol. It really does seem like he is all in on this Saula Final Four, which we can definitely talk about if that's a good idea or not. Yes. So I think that, you know, he I think he's insulated enough to last the next couple of votes. I don't know. Like, to your point, Matt Rogers, I think he got overthrown at what, like final 10, I want to say. I don't know if we're going to get something as big as that, but I could see maybe if we do get down to like a 9 or something, when now that the common enemies are gone, people are going to start looking at the bow across each other. That's when maybe they could organize a coup against Rob. And maybe, you know, when these leading people in the game, like your Mikes or your Jacques, or even someone like Darrow, who has proven himself to be, as much as Dante declared himself a free agent, Darrow is probably the ultimate free agent in the season at this point. Maybe then there could be sort of an underhanded, coup against him. But I think he's good for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, because the group is so big and there are so many subgroups that everyone could reasonably think that they have a real path forward within it. Like, it's not like it's just Saula and then all these other numbers who are on the bottom to come up against them. Like, Jacques might think it's the Amigos, and it might very well be the Amigos for someone like Sipe. We've only really seen it from Rob's perspective, you know, and then other people might think it's a Spit Shake 7, so let's go down to that. So I feel like everyone kind of has an avenue, but Rob was definitely just the godfather here. Like, also extreme Werner vibes. Yeah. Except, like, literally even a bigger bus than Werner had. I feel like Werner had the mini bus compared to what the bus that Rob is pulling right now with 9 people. And it was, like, so it was kind of some ball moves here. It kind of also broke my heart as a Jeff fan, just watching him appeal to people and knowing he had, like, really no options, which was painful. Like, Mike as well, like, his face was pained, and that's how I looked and felt watching it. And then he goes to Rob and is basically like appealing to him. And Rob is like, oh, well, we heard you threw Nicole's name out. And Jeff's like, I love Nicole. Like, I don't know. You know, it was like literally like watching a mob boss, which, you know, and that's where that scene you talked about, Mike, where he looks at the camera. And Jeff's like, I don't know why I'm on the outs now. Like, he's so confused by it based on the previous vote. He's basically just begging for his life. He goes against the one guy who's actually voting with him in Dante, and just kind of feeds more into the Rob train, which he thinks is his only option. Like, it was really painful for me to watch. And PK, as I've said, I think that you have experience here trying to break into this larger group. So how do you kind of deal with it when there's this really big, powerful group? They all think they have options. They don't think it's their time to flip, even if maybe for some of them it is. And you're appealing to them and getting nowhere. Like, how do you deal with that?
I got to tell you, this episode made me sick. Like, just watching Jeff like scramble and try to convince people, and just, you know, it really reminded, like, as you said, it reminded me a lot of myself.
Yeah.
You know, and in this kind of predicament, because Rob has got such a strong hold on the game, and he's such a good social player, like the way he pulled Rob in from under Jeff and Nicole coming in from Saula, you know, like he pulled them in, and right now it's like a strong 9, and Jeff just found himself, I guess he was overthrown in the social departments, because like right now, man, Robbins is doing something that's really amazing. And I hope it's not going to be predictable moving forward. You know, I really hope this game is not going to be predictable moving forward, whereas, you know, Dante and Mabe are going to come out. But yeah, I got to say, in Jeff's position, like, he was really on the outs, and in that kind of predicament, you can do what you can do. You can try to do what you can do. You can promise people the world. But if they feel like, listen, we safe in the 9 right now, or 7, because some people don't really know that it's a 9. You know, we safe as a strong 7 right now, and we know we have majority. So there's no need. We don't see a need for us to join you, Jeff. In that kind of predicament, there is absolutely nothing you can do. But I just really do hope that the game's not going to be predictable. I hope someone switches something up somehow.
No. Yeah, I think that maybe Rob's best move this episode, quite honestly, is what he did like first in this episode. And not only pulling Darrow and Nicole aside, but also specifically saying, like, just so you know, there is a 7 going on, but we're good. Like, I'm not going to stick with them. I think it's just great to, you know, make a good relationship or build on a good relationship by saying, just so you know, this is something that happened while you were away. But then also, you know, alleviating any tension that you might have by saying, but I'm not going to stick to that. You know, I do want to stick by you. I do want to ask you guys what your thought is on him wanting to go solo strong until the final 4, because it does seem like he wants to, you know, do it for Nathan, just like the Kucha tribe did it for that one guy who fell into the fire, who I will not mention, that one time in Survivor Australia. But I mean, if this does somehow end up happening and Rob gets to the final 4 with Sipe, Nicole, and Steffi, assuming it's a final 3, I mean, do we think this is his best path to the win? Do you think he's guaranteed a win no matter what at this point?
the one person I wouldn't want to sit next to for Rob would be Sipe, because Sipe, as completely we know, agree. Is Beyonce levels of amazing.
That's the main problem, is I think that Sipe has just gotten, and Rob's gotten a large amount of respect as well, especially from those that have left the game. But Sipe, I feel like, has gotten even more respect and has, you know, the ability to, as we heard about, like, really motivate herself and others in tribal council. That I think that's the main part of the plan. I think Rob's eyeing Nicole right now as someone to sit next to, understandably so, and maybe even Steffi, because while she does have this challenge prowess, I don't know if personally she has the bonds and strategic maneuvers that Rob does. But I mean, Sipe has all the benefits of being Rob's number two without, you know, being able to get targeted from the negative aspects of being the figurehead of an alliance. I feel like that's the main critique of that all Seoul of Final Four, is that Sipe is sitting right there, and if you do not get rid of her at Final Four, you are facing a very tough road to win this game.
But I wouldn't be putting money on her in a Final Four challenge against Nicole, Steffi, and Rob. And then you take her out of four and you're sitting next to Steffi and Nicole. That's an incredibly good situation. I think something with Sipe as well is that she brings in her own numbers. So I really want to know, is Sipe more on the Amigo side of things right now or the Misfit side? Because, you know, Rob says he wants to go Seoul is strong. Does Sipe want to go Misfits to the end? Because then at some point she's going to be leading that charge. She'll have to overthrow Rob and kind of overthrow Saula. So for me, that's why she's so dangerous, is like, will she make a move on you? But I do think that you can kind of assume you'll beat her in a challenge and take her out towards the end if she's not actually going to get you first. So I don't hate that for Rob. Yes. I think the fact that he said he was doing it for Nathan was kind of funny, because obviously Nicole was the main person who betrayed Nathan. So that's like a weird way. That's a weird way to honor him, unless she's like really convinced him that, you know, she did it for Nathan's benefit. Will Rob stop talking about Nathan ever? Will we get a Nathan mention every single episode until episode 18?
You know what? It seems like that's what's going to happen here. You know, every single episode, like, Nathan gets mentioned by Rob, and it's just, it's looking very creepy right now, and I hope it's not going to continue this way throughout the whole entire episode, throughout the whole entire season.
Well, you know what's going to happen is we're going to get to the family visit, because we know Rob's making the family visit, and Rob's family visit is going to be Nathan.
Yeah, and then Jacques steals it from him if Rob wins, and like Rob will never, like, that's the end of Jacques if that happens. Like, not in the game, like in life, if he steals his time with Nathan. But I also want to talk about Darrell and Rob with this new bromance, which is amazing. The fact that Rob recruited Darrell. Also on Twitter, Johnny Reese Caffrey did mention that we can call it the Rob Mariano Alliance, because that's Darrell's last name, which is amazing. But Darrell in his fluffy robe is the most perfect willing spy, literally coming back to Rob and telling him every single thing that happened on the reward, everything that's happening in the conversations. It is really fun for me to watch. Mike, as our resident Darrell expert, did this give you joy or does this make you worried for Darrell?
No, it makes me so happy. I love Snitch Darrell. It's such a fun role for him to play, because he is one of the reasons why I've been really pumping him up, is because he is the most unsuspecting person left in the game at this point, maybe besides Letitia, and only because she said she wanted to quit the game at this point. Like I think even if they find out, like, hey, Darrell told on you that you had this conversation with Jeff, nobody's going to be mad at him, because he's Darrell, and he's going to go into a monologue at Tribal Council about how he ate so much food and didn't want to eat the nachos. Darrell, who, while Dante is pitching himself to Jeff and Mappa, he's just sitting there shoving food down his face. It's just, this is why Darrell is actually in a very, very good position, because, I mean, now he sort of did what Mike did a few episodes ago and getting surprisingly close with Rob. It really does seem like, from what Rob was telling us at Confessions, like, I feel like Darrell leapfrogged several people in the Spitshaker 7 to a very good position, because I think Rob can feel like now, like, yeah, I know I can trust him. And maybe you don't need to, because Darrell is someone that can very easily just jump around. I was also very impressed that Darrell was able to convince his little group to send Jacques to the Island of Secrets. Maybe it's because that Jeff and Mappa were together. I feel like if they were separated, maybe they would try to push to send the other one there. But considering Darrell just sort of like threw Jacques' name out there, much like Sipe did in the pre-merge to Darrell himself, that was a nice way to get, you know, a friend to the Island of Secrets, to get the possessions in their hands. So, of course, hopefully Darrell won't out this like he did Jacques' idol. I don't know. This was a really great episode of Doral because he's able to better his position in the game while simultaneously still just being the biggest doof of the season. And so it's all the love I have for Doral has just been growing impossibly so over the past few episodes.
Yeah, I think Rob is actually planning on taking Doral to top two. I mean, there's no reason not to, because sitting in that position, if they are going to do a top two, people are obviously going to vote for Rob over Doral. And, you know, Doral has not really been making such huge moves like Rob has. And hopefully, I'm calling it, I feel like Dante is going to be voted out next. And if it does become 10 people, you know, I hope Nicole is seeing this whole thing, this whole alliance that's happening with Rob and Doral. And I hope Nicole does something about it. I don't know what she's going to do. But then I think I saw a snippet of her saying something. Well, yes, she did. As a matter of fact, she said Rob has got all the power right now. You know, she mentioned the idols that he has and the individual immunity and that she called him King Rob, you know. So hopefully Nicole wakes up and she just scurries up and just she does something about this whole thing. And hopefully when they get to 10 people, Nicole can maybe pull in like the former Lomé, perhaps like Marba, Jack, Mike, Letitia and herself. And she just does something to try to power Rob, because Rob is really, if something doesn't happen with him at this point, I think he might really just go all the way.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see Doral at Final Tribal Council. They'd be like, Doral, tell me about your moves in the game. And he just gives them like a grocery list of all the things he's eaten throughout the season. It would be amazing to watch. But Mike, I'm interested to hear that you think Doral was really responsible for sending Jacques to Island of Secrets. I think Doral was part of it, but I kind of saw Dante kind of putting his foot on the pedal a little bit to send Jacques, who just voted with him twice, right? And in saying that, I want to talk about Jacques a little bit and Dante, actually. Jacques, I need to apologize to, actually, because I think last week I misinterpreted what he had said. I thought that he was wanting to take out a full pair, you know, Meryl and then Dante. But actually, in going back and watching it, he wanted to keep the equilibrium and take out, you know, Meryl and then Jeff, you know, one from each pair and keep swimming back pendulum style. And I just got that wrong. And it's really annoying when people get things wrong on a podcast and you're just in your car yelling at them. So I apologize for that. So I still wouldn't have advocated, you know, voting, putting two votes on someone who was going to go home. But knowing that he wanted to take out Jeff next, I think makes it a lot better for me. And also now, the fact that he actually got Jeff out and finished that plan and completed it, because we know Jeff was refusing to work with him. Well, Jeff actually needed him more than obviously Jacques needed Jeff. And also Jeff's gone. So that is now basically it solved itself. He completed the plan. I have to credit him there. And the move last week paid off, because I do think that the trust he had with Dante, you know, if he votes twice against Dante and completely leaves him out and betrays him, I don't know if Dante is sanctioning sending Jacques to Island of Secrets. So he did go there with the capacity to get an advantage in the game, I think a lot based on the move he made last week. So it worked out better than at least I thought.
Yes. But then he got to Island of Secrets.
Yes.
So let's talk about this, because PK, I'm really intrigued to get, you know, the reward steal advantage has a tiny bit of historical precedence. There is one U.S. season that utilized it. Quite frankly, I'm very intrigued that has not appeared since, considering that it was an advantage that, like, did not have a seismic effect on the game. But, you know, Jacques now has the power to steal one reward for, I think, the rest of the season. He has the idea to steal the family visit. That's what he has been preparing for, because he wants to see his wife more than anything. I know, unfortunately, you just missed out on the family visit, but I mean, had you done that, and let's say Tom stole your family visit from you, I mean, is this like automatic grounds to target somebody if they steal your family visit?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I think for all castaways in history, in life, the one thing that you really are looking forward to is like family visits, you know, because you're out there and you're playing this game and you're always amongst like enemies, people that are trying to go against you and like get you out, you know, and the one thing that you do want is like, you know, some love and some compassion and just a break from the game, and you get that by a family visit. So for someone to take that thing away from you, it really is an act of war. And I really think should Jacques play that move and take a family visit away from someone, he's automatically going to be targeted. Like, naturally, there's no way around it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the one time we've seen this is with Adam in Millennials versus Gen X, and he didn't steal the family visit even after talking about it, even in the worst possible circumstances where he was trying to get information about his sick mother back home. I think that he kind of did use it well by, you know, talking about it, but then not using it. So people were actually grateful to him for not using it. You know, Jacques crying that this was the advantage he wanted. He should have been crying that it was such a bad advantage on the Island of Secrets. Adam does end up giving it to Jay, and Jay uses it, I think, in a pretty good way, which is you win a reward. I mean, you lose a reward. Someone else wins. You steal from them. You still choose the winner to come with you on the reward. And obviously you get to go, and then you pick the other people. But I still really, really think you do not want to do that at the family reward, because people throw the family reward, you know, just to not have to pick who gets love and who doesn't get love. So to put yourself in the position where whether you win or lose, you've now stolen it, put yourself in that place, even if you keep the winner with you on the reward, so don't actually steal it from them, you really just don't want to be choosing who gets love in that moment. So just keep it far away from the loved ones challenge, I would say. And look, let's not prejudge Jacques, because this is something Adam said he was going to do, and then he didn't. So I think we'll make him the doof of the week if and when he does that, because that will be so bad from a super fan who should be throwing the loved ones challenge, not stealing it. But I'm willing to wait and see if he sees some sense before his wife actually gets to the island.
I would love if he, much like Adam did during Millennials versus Gen X, if he was able to barter this reward steal for some sort of information, because this dude has been swimming in advantages at this point, right? He just uses extra vote. He has an idol, but if he can say, like, if he can get essentially someone else to do the thing that he was going to do by being like, hey, you know, Quibus, I know that you wanted to see. Yeah. Hey, Dante, you wanted to see your coffee shop co-owner and talk about how social it is back there. Listen, why don't you get,
what a guy.
Yeah, you can do that, and I'll, and, you know, just to, you know, to make sure that we vote together. Or Rob, listen, I know you love to see Nathan, so I'm going to give this to you to guarantee that you're going to see Nathan, and just paint that target bigger. You know, I feel like this is not like a dead in the water advantage that, you know, only he can possess. I do have hope that Jacques will be able to figure out some sort of like fourth dimensional way to use it, or at least to your point, Shannon, if and when we get to that family visit, that he's not going to be like, hold up, I know you want to see your mom, but I'm going to, you know, I'm going to see my wife. If he does that, I'm hoping he at least picks that person that he stole from to see their family member as well, because otherwise that's just so cold blooded.
Still so bad though. Like, you really just don't be stealing. You know, that's a challenge you should be throwing. That's a challenge that people actively throw, like, to not even win it and steal it. I think there are ways that this can work in really, like, more subtle ways, because it's just an advantage steal. It shouldn't be that important. Once you put in the loved ones challenge, it becomes, like, extreme. If you're just stealing another reward somewhere and still taking the winner with you, like, it can be fine. Or, as you said, even better, use it as a bargaining chip. Or, even better, get someone else to ruin their game with it. Unfortunately, this is not what we saw where Jacques' head was at. I was thinking when you said it, like, Rob is way too smart to fall for this. But when you said his loved one would be Nathan, I was like, no, he would kill his game for that. You're right. That's his one weakness. The kryptonite to his Batman. He wasn't the Superman that we talked about. But I could definitely see that happening. Let's wait and see if Jacques disappoints us all later on in the season before we prejudge him.
And I feel like in the game, like, seeing your family really can't give you any game advantage, you know? In a game of Survivor, it can't help you progress in any way. So there's nothing that can be of beneficial to you by seeing your family. So rather just get actually be the complete opposite, like you guys say, of detriment.
I mean, it's the most emotional moment of the season. So, like, considering how much emotions can influence your gameplay, it's not exactly the moment where you want to earn a lot of ire on your side. I want to know from you, PK, because I think a theme of this season is how Island of Secrets has turned out to be quite the opposite, where people are just revealing their powers and idols left and right. But you were somebody who, you know, literally found an idol in front of people reading their own letters from home and ended up playing it and completely surprising everybody, not telling a soul. So I guess from that perspective, how surprised or not surprised are you that nobody is able to essentially keep their mouth shut over the course of this season?
I don't know. Like, I don't know what's happening with this season. I think people are very friendly. You know, people are very outspoken. It's called the Island of Secrets, but they're not really keeping things a secret. You know what I mean? So I'm really surprised by what's happening in the season. Like, hopefully it's going to be more of an individual game moving forward, you know, and people are going to be keeping secrets and we're going to be seeing more, as I said earlier, more idle trains happening in tribal councils and, you know, things actually being revealed, like, you know, such power moves like idols being revealed at tribal council instead of the way it's going on right now. Like, I'm really not understanding. A person finds an idol 2 minutes later, the whole world knows. I'm not getting it. Doesn't make sense to me.
PK, I think that sometimes people start binging Survivor and they start with like the best season and then everything else is a letdown. I feel like that happened with you, except you played the best season. So now you're like, where are the idol trains? You have to know idol trains are extremely rare. Like,
where's all the things that
happen. Yeah, exactly. All the things that happen in your season are like, we're not expecting these to, like, this is still a great season to me, but it's not just insane like yours. Like, I don't think we're expecting idol trains for the rest of the season. And that's okay to me. You know, that doesn't always happen.
Oh, I'm so disappointed.
They need you on the season causing the chaos, PK.
Absolutely. I hope somebody can take that position. I hope somebody can.
Well, let's talk about someone who may be able to cause the chaos, and that is Dante, who, you know, I talked about on this episode, actually, I thought was making sense in a vacuum to kind of get Lao Mei and Ta'alo together. Unfortunately, that did come, you know, off the back of, in the past, you know, threatening to punch Jeff and stuff. Like, there was really no basis for a connection there. But I kind of, this was the most I've enjoyed what he did in the game, because he's so transparent as well that you can kind of take him at his word. Like, the way that he was talking in that reward, they were like, well, this guy's not lying, because he also, you know, he threatened to hug me with his fist. Like, he's not playing with the niceties, right? So, Mike, what did you think about what Dante was doing in this episode?
This is where we saw Dante's sincerity cut both ways. You know, he has been brutally honest to people in the past to the point of coming across like an asshole. But from the strategic perspective, the benefit is you always know where he's going to vote. You know, even though he had been feuding with Jeff, he does make up grounds with him. And he said, hey, Rob went to me to vote for you. I'm going to let you know that I'm not going to do that because I made a promise to you first. And he does go through with that. So, you know, if he does find himself prospectively being brought into an alliance, I think he's proved his worth there. I do wonder, and again, this always comes back to that age-old debate of content versus intent. You know, I do wonder if maybe Jeff had been more approachable to vote out someone like Nicole if Dante maybe come at him with a different attitude. You know, Jeff felt like he was quote unquote threatened by Dante. And I personally didn't see that from the way we were watching things. But I mean, I also can't necessarily say that Jeff shouldn't have felt that way just because of the way that they've interacted in the past, where I think Dante was more so coming out to him out of like a last ditch effort of like, hey, this is something that needs to happen right now. And Jeff was more so thinking that Dante's saying like, this needs to happen right now or I'm going to beat you up.
Yeah,
exactly. So I could see where they're, you know, where both sides are coming from in that matter. But I totally agree with you, Shannon. I think that Dante did some very interesting things considering the position that he knew he was in. And maybe this means he'll be able to slide through a couple more weeks if he's able to navigate a bit more. But I do think that it was surprisingly mature of Dante for him at the reward to really try to make it be water under the bridge with Jeff and Maba. But considering how burned that bridge was, I think he was trying to put planks down on a raging river. And at that point, as much as you admire the effort, it's tough to not have them get swept away.
Yeah, I mean, mature from him for sure, but also he was completely isolated at that point, so he was kind of in a desperate position. I still liked what he was doing. I agree that I feel like, obviously, Jeff was misinterpreting it based on the fact that Dante, as I said, just crazy to me. If you would have told me last week, it's like, which two people vote with Jeff when he gets voted out next week, and one of them was Dante, that is crazy hilarious to me, you know, in that he voted thinking he was on Jeff's side. Jeff didn't vote with Dante. Jeff couldn't have thrown Dante under the bus soon enough, but Dante was trying his best. I think that obviously how rocky the relationship was before, it just was not a very healthy breeding ground for a new alliance. Also, the numbers he was pulling together, while it does make sense, it had people like Kubus and Jacques and Mike, who we know have their own thing going on within the 9 or the 7 or, you know, the greater group. And then I also think that Nicole really was not the right name to be throwing out. I mean, Jeff just voted with Nicole 2 episodes ago when she took out Nathan. Like, you know, in this episode, Jeff did say Steffi and Rob were two people he was thinking of. Who is sticking up for Steffi? I feel like Steffi is a nice neutral name that maybe some other people are going to go for. And Nicole is too attached in different ways based on the way that she's kind of dealt with people in the game. So, PK, what did you think about what Dante was doing in this episode?
Yeah, no, like the way that I'm seeing this is that, you know, Dante really didn't, he didn't have a choice but to listen to Jeff and try to do what Jeff advised him to do, you know, because they're essentially, they are arts. Like Jeff, Dante and Maba, they are outcasted. There is, they literally have their backs against the wall. So for Jeff to go to Dante and be like, okay, listen, let's try to find Nicole. I mean, Dante really has nowhere else to go, you know? So, that's just the way that I'm seeing it. And I don't think he's going to survive the next episode, especially after voting for Nicole this previous episode. I think Nicole's going to, as a matter of fact, tell Rob and the rest of the gang that, okay, this guy's been gunning for me and they're on the outside anyway. So I think, guys, let's just get Dante out because they have nothing to lose by getting Dante out. So as I said, I'm calling it. I think Dante is going to, he's not going to survive this next episode.
Especially because now it's been proven that Rob was saying to Jeff, like, you know, whether that was real or kind of disingenuous and just trying to keep Jeff on his toes. But he was like, oh, well, I hear you're coming from Nicole. And Jeff was like, it wasn't me. It was literally like watching someone in a, like, literally getting tortured in this mob movie. That's how I saw it. But he was like, it was Dante. And now that's actually been proven. So he's kind of now made this aggressive move against, you know, the powerful group. If he had voted for Jeff, he might have been able to fly under the radar, maybe a little bit more.
The only thing I could see, and he also has this, you know, hey, I know that Dante didn't do too well in a water challenge this episode, but I feel like if any challenge involves swimming, Dante's got that on lock. But I do wonder, with the way they got rid of Meryl, if we see something similar happen with Maba next episode. You know, like, Dante's a big alluring target, but at the same time, I could also see a world where they say, yeah, but if we don't vote out Maba now, we're going to blink and she's going to be in the final five and we won't realize it. You know, like, I would say that, yes, Dante would be the bigger target to get rid of next time. But considering the reason why they ended up targeting Meryl last episode, I could see a universe where Maba ends up going in front of Dante, especially because, as well, Maba now, I think, is a generally nicer person when it comes to approaching. And I think if you're looking at somebody who gets on the nerves of other jury members, especially considering how his quote unquote worst enemy, even though he tried to vote with him, is sitting in the jury, maybe Dante isn't the best choice to take out. But I totally agree with you, Shannon. I think that what Dante also could have done was, you know, I know he's been stuck on voting out Nicole ever since, you know, what happened with Nathan, the Nathan vote. But I think Steffi could have been a really interesting way to combine all these interests of, okay, someone who's part of that Saula majority, but someone who's not as well connected.
And such a huge physical threat as well. I mean, look at this challenge again.
Yes, second challenge in a row where she's last until the final two, at least. So, I mean, all you need to do is look at that moving forward. I think that would have been a really interesting person to target. But I do think Dante's judgment was maybe a bit clouded by revenge. And maybe he does blame Meryl's boot a bit on Nicole as well, considering how she approached the two of them in that infamous hammock scene. So, well, I think if he's able to maybe get his mind away from Nicole and maybe, you know, figure out a reasoning to get rid of somebody else, he might have a chance. But yeah, he's looking at a slippery slope right now.
Yeah, I think we're all on the same page that this nine should be staying together maybe for another vote for at least Maba or Dante, if not both of them in the next two votes before kind of like the subgroups start coming out. Because it's 9 of 11, so we can't stay like this forever. So there's definitely going to be a shakeup soon. Nicole as well, her losing finals campaign marches on for me. Just some things she did in this episode. She says she'd be happy to lose to Saula because at least they're deserving, which is, you know, the trigger word. We really don't like that word. And she would not lie to Jeff's face. So to me, she just stabbed him in the back. You know, I think he goes to Ponderosa really unhappy about the fact that he was so loyal to her and she was not loyal to him, even if she didn't promise him things directly to his face. It's like not a very good loophole when you're betraying someone. And actually, amazingly, Jeff is at Ponderosa campaigning for Mike, who he feels was kind of genuine in the fact that he had to vote him out and he felt like he looked really upset at tribal council, and he still has that love for Mike. So he doesn't seem to have it for Nicole. To me, I now see two jurors who are just completely destroying Nicole at a final tribal council if she gets there. So, PK, what do you think about Nicole? Do you see her long for the game, and do you think she has a chance to win?
Okay, I'm going to say something interesting. You know, as much as I think Dante won't survive the next episode, but I don't think Maba is going to be leaving after Dante. I think Nicole could be leaving before Maba. I think something like that could happen because of how Nicole's been playing throughout this whole game, and the fact that, you know, she played a part in getting out Nathan. I think within the Super 7 Alliance and with Rob controlling it, it doesn't seem like Rob really trusts Nicole that much, and Steffi as well. And, you know, and I think Rob is going to see that Mubba is right now, you know, she's got nowhere to go, and she's very controllable. She's very easy to approach. So I think there could be a switch up here when Nicole tries to overpower Rob, because she's been noticing that Rob has got a lot of power. And Mubba could be like, hey, Nicole's been campaigning against you. And something could be seen a happy blindside, but I don't think Nicole is going to make it that far.
That's a fair. I mean, I think it's just because Shannon and I were so convinced that Nicole would be a great person to take to the end, because I think as soon as she starts talking about, like, I got the good people here, yeah, like, that's the worst thing, yes, to tell to the jury. Yeah, but I think, PK, you make a really interesting point of how I could see her own agency in the game take her out, you know, or maybe the allure, mm-hmm, of getting her to the end might be overwhelmed by her trying to organize something with these social connections that Dante and Meryl talk so much about. Though I don't know, I mean, would Nicole organize a coup against another Saula member? I guess she's already done it once.
Yeah, exactly.
If there's an article of clothing that she wants from Rob, I guess she'd be primed to do it.
And she doesn't actually, yes, even have to be organizing it. You know, she's already untrustworthy in the fact that she did go for Nathan. So while it seems like those cracks have been papered over, you never know if in the future she does something a little bit shady and they're like, well, she did take out Nathan, so maybe we can't trust her as well. I think she's in a precarious position, but I still see her penciled in for that final tribal council, maybe just because, you know, that would be, I think, kind of like the obvious pathway in US Survivor. I'm not as sure about South African Survivor, but I can just see those jury speeches. I can see Meryl and Jeff bonding right now with Ponderosa about how much Nicole irks them. I totally see it. So, I mean, we'll see. And another person who actually got some focus in this episode was Letitia. And I feel like I need to get on my soapbox right now, because Letitia, she says she wants to be voted out of the game. She will not quit. She only wants to be voted out, which to me is the same thing with pretty much no distinction. But, you know, that's what she wants. And I know people get very defensive about this because it's an honor to play the game. And basically, like, you should never have any moments of weakness. But to be fair, she snaps out of it pretty quickly when they say they won't be wasting a vote on her, which I think is also totally fair from my perspective if it doesn't work into your plans. And she goes out the next day, and even when offered nachos, she does the challenge. She does well in the challenge. Like, I'm so impressed by her. She's the oldest person in the game. She's the physically weakest. She's doing so many things out there that I could never do. I'm not going to judge her for feeling guilty for kind of, you know, ruining the reward challenge for everyone else and feeling like she doesn't want to, you know, being insecure about that and feeling like she doesn't want to bring everyone down. So she had a moment of weakness, and I just feel like I will never judge anyone on Survivor doing things way scarier than I could ever do for feeling weak in that moment. But PK, you're a contestant, so it's more of a holy grail for you. So did this bother you with Letitia, or did you kind of see where she was coming from?
No, absolutely. You know, we all have that moment of weakness. As a matter of fact, I myself, they didn't show this, but I think it was the third day three, where it just started raining and our shelter, like, we just got into the island, our shelter was not complete. And we hungry, and our fire is out because it's raining, you know. And at that point, I was like, guys, I really feel like I can't do this anymore. And it wasn't just myself. Everybody agreed. They were like, yeah, like, we really, genuinely, this is horrible. You know, we hungry, it's dark. You literally can't see your hand in front of your face because it's clouds. You can't even see the moon because the moon is, like, you know, shadowed by clouds. So then that whole thing happened where I was with Tony on that island after we just voted out Josie, and we were hungry. We hadn't eaten for about 5 days, you know, and we can't even catch fish because the water is moving very, very fast, and it's cold. We can't even eat coconuts because they're now giving us diarrhea because we've been eating them so much. And it gets to a point where the game really, really breaks you. So I understand exactly where Letitia is coming from, and I commend her for actually waking up and saying, you know what, I'm overcoming this. I'm going to remain strong, and I'm going to push forward.
I can't tell you how impressed I was seeing her participate in that challenge when the nachos were presented. I have to say, pretty small plate of nachos, I thought. But
listen, it at least looked like a good plate of nachos as opposed to Australian Survivor, which more so went for quantity over quality.
And didn't have guacamole, which I'll never be so ashamed to be an Australian again. I'm officially reclaiming all my South African heritage because at least you put guacamole on your nachos as a reward. That was terrible on Australian Survivor. But yeah, she doesn't want to go for the nachos and the guacamole. She does the challenge, even though she knows she's probably not going to be beating, you know, Dante, who's Aquaman, Steffi and Rob. And that just impressed me so much. I'm also going to get on my soapbox and say I will never be mad at people for sitting out of a challenge for food. You know, sometimes that's what you need in that time. Sometimes, you know, you're safe. You better not get voted out because then you look like an idiot. But if your read on the situation is good enough to be safe and you feel like food will be do better for you, or you feel like you don't want to show your threat level, or there's a million other reasons based on the, you know, entirety of the overall game that you might not want to, you know, sit in a chat, do actually do a challenge and eat nachos instead. So I really didn't mind that for the people who chose to sit out, but I'm always going to be impressed when people who are starving choose to go up against people we've compared to superheroes. Someone like a Letitia goes into the challenge and actually just tests herself to do it. That does always impress me.
The worst thing you can do for yourself is get to Ponderosa with a full stomach.
Yeah.
That's yeah, because I think then that's when you have your biggest regrets of like, man, I could have, you know, sat out or why did I sit out and, you know, or take this temptation? And I think that Letitia's decision to participate, I think just goes back to this whole thing just goes back to, I think, her general attitude about the game, which I think does come from a place of honor. A bit like I feel like one of the reasons why she wanted to leave is because she was very emotionally charged and feeling like she let her group down. And considering how literally life or death it is out there, especially this season, it does seem like, you know, not to compare seasons to yours, PK, but it seems like the rain was a giant element of this past season, and they felt really battered down. And so I can understand how she felt like she was really letting down, you know, people like Steffi and Sipe and Quibus, who were on the same team as her. I was confused at first because I thought when she was complaining about, you know, Nico calling her out, I thought she was like, you know, calling out Nico of like, why are you throwing me under the bus? But I think more so she was picking on herself. And so, you know, I think that I personally will never, I will never criticize somebody for quitting unless you're like a Colton Cumby and you're like, I'm on the bottom, so I want to quit. So I'm going to take my ball and go home. Like, I think Letitia genuinely felt like she was coming from an emotional place. And while I do understand where some people are coming from of like, if you want to quit, then quit, which I think was sort of where Mike was coming from, which was, you know, I understand his perspective. I can understand why the momentum of the game would get cut off by a quit a bit. We've seen in the past how, you know, when Julie McGee quit in Survivor San Juan del Sur, that delayed things a bit. But I just found it very odd that he's like, oh, Letitia, if you should quit, like, nobody will be mad at you. You should quit today instead of a tribal council. And I totally agree with you about sitting out to eat. You know, I think Jacques and Sipe both knew they were not going to win that challenge anytime soon. You know, Quibus, I thought maybe it was more of a straightforward decision for him to compete considering how athletic he is, but he was the first one to say,
everything in life isn't straight.
So, oh, I love that.
It's his life's philosophy, so I can understand, especially since he did end up losing out on that challenge, and I'm sure his body was craving some necessary calories.
The man wanted nachos. You can't judge the decision.
So, yeah, and I want to talk about the challenge as well, because this is something that has been done a few times in U.S. Survivor. It is, from my perspective, the most legitimately terrifying challenge that they've done, and I love how simple it is, where it's just, like, almost mind over matter. Just sit there and see at what point you panic. But this might have been the scariest one of them all, because correct me if I'm wrong here, Shannon, like, I never saw the tide go that far above the grate before, to the point where the sit out bench is like submerged.
The nachos are getting soggy. It's not right.
Yeah. It's just crazy how basically by the end, usually by the end, you have people with like their mouths barely poking above the surface. By the end, it was essentially Rob and Steffi holding their breaths underwater. It was absolutely insane to me.
Yeah. Watching this from my couch, I think I said on Twitter, I'm also like gasping for air watching it. I would last so short in this challenge. That is a terrifying challenge, to the point where when they did it in Australian Survivor, there were these like terrible news articles being like, they shouldn't be doing this is torture. Like, it's a Survivor challenge, you can, you know, go out at any time. But to me, this is one of the most intense challenges, as you said. So simple, but so perfect. And I also really liked the reward challenge and kind of seeing those groups. I was trying to work out because so Darrell and Kubus and Nicole were the team captains and doing the draft. I was like, how did Kubus get this team? I feel like he definitely had Steffi as the first pick and Letitia as the last pick. It must have been like a kind of snake draft where he had 1, 6, and 9. But I feel like Kubus just didn't A, pick the right team, and B, having that last pick was probably really bad because you really were only as slow as, you know, only as fast as your slowest member. And I think that's why Letitia felt so bad.
I mean, I heard that, you know, after picking Steffi and Cipe, you know, Mike was somehow left on the table and Kubus was contemplating it. But then Cipe whispered in his ear, and so he had to refuse picking him, unfortunately.
I can't play this game with you. When you first started talking, I was like, oh my God, where did you get this extra intel? But it was only an excuse to go with the sound clips. And now I will not believe anything you say from now on. I always fall for it.
There you go. The scorpion finally stings.
Good to know you didn't have any extra intel. You just really wanted to go with that sound clip. And now a quick break to hear from our sponsors. And we are back. All right. Well, let's get to the most important part of the episode. I want to talk about the Chizzy. I want to do a Chizzy leaderboard. It's all very important. So take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3. One.
All right, so I will start with my points, and I got to give 2 points. As I've said, I've compared him to Chizzy winners of the past, Matt Squared. Gonna give 2 points to Rog, because even though it may not last forever, he may be peaking or PKing too early. He does really have incredible control at the moment. In this episode, just a special shout out, as we said, to bringing Nicole and Darrell in their various ways with those personal connections into the 7, now 9. Yeah, and he got out Jeff, which is the person we've seen most throwing out his name in such blatant terms as he did this episode. So, as we said, won the war with Jeff, who I completely trust as a smart person, as a super fan, and as a good player, and Rob really won that war with him. So, 2 points for Rob there. I'm going to give a point to Jacques, kind of an apology point for misunderstanding him last week, and then to credit the way his plan really did come off this week, you know, and I think that it worked out last week because it sent him to the Island of Secrets to get an advantage that might ruin his game, but it also could have been something that won't ruin his game, and maybe he won't do that. So let's also, as I said, not prejudge him, and I like the way that he was doing things in this episode. And then I'm going to give a point to Kubus again. I gave him 2 points last week. Every week that the Spitshake 7 or the Spitshaker 7 dominates the numbers, I continue to be confused about this, like, hastily made alliance running everything. I continue to be impressed. Kubus is in the main talks where he has no right to be. I just really don't understand it, but I'm always impressed by the way that he wormed his way in there when he really had no right to do so. But I am actually going to give an honorable mention to Dante. As I said, made a lot of sense in a vacuum. Lao Mei to Arlo, I've always said, is a supergroup that could have taken the Misfigos down, but never did happen. I did have to demote him, as I said. I thought Nicole was the wrong name to throw out. He did end up voting completely alone with absolutely no one else. The approach was bad. The mistakes of his past came back with the relationship stuff. But this was the best I've seen from him so far. So I gave him an honorable mention. And Mike, which points are you giving out?
So I am going to give, I'm going to upgrade your Dante judgments. I'm going to give him 1 point. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's because it's judging on a curve, but I really do feel like he put in his best work this episode. And I think, you know, when you have Jeff and Maba saying like, hey, I want to believe him, I want to work with him, considering the way that he treated them 2 episodes ago, I feel like that's something commendable. So I'll give him a point there. Of course, I got to give a point to Darrell, just because, you know, not only because I love him, but also the position that he found himself in now that he is Rob's spy. And I think, as he said in this episode, no longer at the top of any hit list. I think he's in a really, really good position right now and has probably the most information, you know, at this point in the game, considering how much he is in the pocket of the guy in charge while simultaneously, you know, having relationship with everybody else. But yeah, I got to give 2 points to Rob here. I mean, this was just really impeccable control that he was able to pull off. And it just shows how much he's been able to influence basically ever since the second swap. It has essentially been Rob's, you know, stronghold over the game. I don't see that coming to an end anytime soon, at least in the next couple weeks. And it really is commendable. So Rob easily gets my two here.
What about you, PK?
Okay, for me, yeah, well, Rob, I mean, absolutely, because he's just extracting all kinds of information from everybody. You know, he's like the key player in the game right now. He's the MVP. So, you know, yeah, he is the king. So I'm going to give him 2 points.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to move on to Letitia.
Oh, wow.
Who I'm going to give a point for, you know, for just being broken and recovering and being strong and overcoming any adversity that she was facing within herself. So, yeah, and also for not going for the nachos initially, going in the end, actually trying to do something about it, you know. And also Jurao, who is absolutely safe right now. I mean, yeah, I feel like Jurao is, he's not really a good survivor player, but the fact that he is Jurao, he is safe under Rob.
Yes!
He's been protected, and I see him going very far, as Mike said. So,
I think Jurao's motto should be like, because he's Jurao, he's safe. I think that's just all the explanation I get for any points I give him from now on.
I think the motto should be, if you can't be good at Survivor, be Jurao. Like, that's the slogan. But Jurao came second in the chili this week after Rob, who clean sweep across the board. Very, very impressive. And I love it because before right now, there were only two people still in the game who didn't have chili points, which was Letitia and Dante. And they're now on the board. So that's really great to kind of include everyone. But to give everyone a bit of a breakdown of the way the chili board leaderboard is looking. So Sipe and Jacques are now tying on 20 at the top. Rob just jumped up to 16. So he's in third, kind of catching up there. And then all but beyond that are people who've been voted out of the game. So Nathan had 13, then Jeff and Tanya were both voted out with 10. So it's really Sipe, Jacques, and Rob who are fighting at the top, which I think is actually pretty accurate. Like, that, I feel good about that.
Mm. Yeah. Though, again, it's
13.
Yeah, well, but Bryce gave him one because he was good looking. And anyway, those are the mistakes of the past.
But it's also Survivor South Africa. You know, we have 8 episodes to go. And PK, I think your season proved that in South Africa, literally anything can happen. And, you know, I would not be surprised if we see more people's meteoric rise in the chizzy points, especially if Rob does have this downfall sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I mean, whoever orchestrates the downfall is getting 6 chizzy points, I think.
You never know what to expect of South Africa. But one thing I got to say, Rob's dynasty must burn.
Blue must
Is
fall.
That the new blue, blue must
eyes.
Fall?
It's blue-green eyes must
yeah,
fall.
The, the blue-green eyes must fall. No, listen, Rob's dynasty must burn. Someone's got to do something about it.
Or you're going to go out into that island him, back but... in time and make it for yourself.
Absolutely.
So doof of the week this week for the worst player of the week. I have to say, like, I was really at a loss for this. I don't really feel like anyone was particularly terrible, but I'm happy to be convinced if there are names you guys are throwing out. But I really racked my brain for who was awful, which I, you know, I'm always happy to call, but I didn't have anyone.
Don't kill me. I'm going to go with Jeff here. And I do agree, though, that this was really hard pick to be like, because nobody played for the first time maybe in this season disastrously this episode. But I do think Jeff did make a couple of things where maybe if he'd made a different decision, maybe if he had said, okay, let's go for Nicole, or if he said, like, hey, maybe I should throw Dante under the bus earlier to Rob, there's a slight chance he could have made it through this tribal council. So just purely from that perspective alone, I love the guy. I love the stuff he was doing before this, but I'm just going to throw his name out there personally.
I think I just saw him just so powerless to this wheel coming against him. It wasn't too bad for me. I feel like I'm doofless this week. I can't be convinced. PK, do you have someone you think was doing anything particularly bad in this week that deserves to be called a doof?
I think for me, the worst player of the week was because I detest people who don't do anything. Like from my season, when John was really not doing anything, she was just literally there and just coasting because of bad enough. The person that I think was worst player of the week, because I hardly saw them, I mean, bless her soul, but I think it was Maba. Like, Maba is on an eternal island of secrets where she's just not coming back. She's just, I'm not seeing her do anything, you know? So because she's not really contributing to the game of Survivor, she's just chilling, listening to people talk. She's not really contributing in absolutely any way. I really want to give it to her.
I think I could see that more than Jeff, because Jeff, I think, was still bringing things to it that was still completely dwarfed by what Rob was doing, just because Rob is Rob. But Maba, I don't know what connection she brings in. Like, I don't know how she could have helped with this. And, like, however many days into the game we are and 10 episodes in, I feel like there should be more you have to show for it to maybe help out. But I still feel like I'm kind of doofless. But, yeah, so that's...
I'm so excited to see her and Dante partner up next week. Shades of Palesta and Tom sharing a bed before she left. It's just, it's so fun to watch the fact that he made her cry before the merge, and now they're deciding to work together. Like, Survivor makes strange bedfellows sometimes, and so I'm very excited to see. Again, they're sort of up a creek at this point without any sort of paddle to be found, but I think that partnership is what makes Survivor a lot of fun.
Yeah, Dante's really showing some, like, wide-eyed innocence for me now. He's like, we can work together. I don't know if Maba's really going to go for it, but they are the only two not in the nine, so they kind of need each other right now if they can, or they could probably do the other thing and throw each other well under the bus. Hope that, you know, by the time it gets to 10, maybe something breaks. I think that might be better, because even if they work together, it's still 2 versus 9. So that is a lot. So I do think maybe Maba should be throwing Dante under the bus and hoping that people forget about her in the next week. But that's not talk about strategy. Let's talk about what people actually care about, and that is the sponsors. So it's the Biostress Variety Hour. Take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and the U.S. Army Blues.
And now it's the Biostress Variety Hour with your host, Shannon. And also Mike Bloom.
All right. Well, social media this week was a little weird. You know, a lot of the sponsors have stopped tweeting. Steers, I'm looking at you. Steers is really not live tweeting the episodes anymore. They're just tweeting about Steers, and I am not here for it. But
I think they're a little too big for their britches now that they had their big spotlight a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, well, sponsors, I mean, Steers has always been, like, the biggest one of the sponsors, so I was just waiting for them to kind of leave us all in their dust, and it seems they've done that, which is disappointing. But Biostress this week was easily the star of the sponsors. They had some strange takes on the game, and they were also sending direct shade, adding some contestants on Twitter. My favorite one, they said, at Rob Bentil, you should focus on the game, not about people voted off. Focus. Love that. Got to say, I agree with them.
Wow. I also did notice a lot of talk about Quibus's sort of questionable palm tree metaphor as well, which I'm still a bit confused by, but I do love the attempt. Very David Wright-esque, which I know, Shannon, is close to your heart.
Yeah, I mean, I was losing the plot of what he was trying to do. It was like, so there's one palm tree, then there's a second palm tree. It was like a riddle. Then there was a third palm tree, and I was trying to see it in my mind, but the math was getting just out of hand for me with that analogy. So I don't know. Yeah. Nico loved it, though. Nico was like, that was so well put. So...
Yeah, I more so got the clue reference than I did the palm tree reference. Once you said that, then it more so came together.
A lot of mixed messaging there, but I do have a quiz for us this week based on Biostress, and it's basically just based on their really strange thoughts about this episode. So I've got 4 tweets, and one of them is a Cape Union Mart tweet, and 3 of them are Biostress tweets, and I'm going to ask you guys to guess which is the Cape Union Mart tweet. BK, welcome to the Survivor South Africa podcast, where this is what we do. All right, tweet number 1, if you guys are ready. Jacques has been quite strategic in the past. We wonder what he'll come back with from iOS. And the reason I chose this tweet is because strategic is in quotation marks, which was like pretty shady to me, like strategic, like they're making fun of him. So chose that one. The next one. Jeff consulting with Rob before making a decision. Is this a new bromance we see here? And I chose that one because of how off base it was. The third one. I think that Mike has some very real concerns to Jeff's safety in the game. Love that. On the money. And the fourth one. Is Letitia really feeling the heat or simply playing the game? That was a fun... I don't think anyone thought that Letitia was not actually... Like, she actually did want to quit and wasn't actually just trying to pull one over on them. But either Cape Union Mart or Biostress was like, maybe there are layers to this, which I enjoyed. So, which... On a system, which tweet do you feel like was Cape Union Mart?
Okay, let me. All right, so we're each writing down our own answers?
Yes.
Okay, can you read them out one more time?
Okay, so the first one was when they called Jock strategic, in quotation marks. The second one was the Jeff-Rob bromance, terrible call. The third one was Mike's concerns about Jeff's safety, just calling it as it is. And the fourth one was Letitia thinking that she was masterminding her own quit.
Wait, do you have to decide which one was Cape Union Mart?
Yes, and yes. The other three are Biostrath.
So, PK, you're the one who has the closest access to Biostrath, considering that you actually, you know, took Biostrath out there on the island, where Shannon and I have not. So I don't know if this gives you any sort of advantage or disadvantage.
I think you might be still feeling the effects of that Biostrath that could help you in this quiz.
Yeah, like a whole year later, right?
Mm-hmm. That's how good
it is.
I don't
know how long it stays in your system.
Yeah, forever. You can't get that stuff out.
Well, I don't know if that's the case here, but okay, so the one that had the word focus, that had to be Biostrath. Anything with the word focus.
Mm-hmm.
Cape Union Mods must have been what did you say about Letitia quitting and throwing one over?
Okay, the Letitia one. All right, Mike, what do you think?
I'm going to go with the Mike one. I forget if that one had focus in it, but I feel like the other three are shady yet off base enough to actually come from Biostrath.
Shady yet off base. That's in the Twitter bio for Biostrath. The Twitter Biostrath. But actually, yes, Mike, you are correct. The tweet about your namesake was Cape Union Mart. So you win. I don't know. I got nothing for you, but you win my approval getting the quiz back in this segment. Sorry, PK, you are 0-1, so you might have to come back to try the Biostrath quiz. But I did also love this from Biostrath.
Man.
They put out a poll and they said, who do you think will sit this one out, one of the ladies or one of the guys, talking about the challenge, which is weird because it like wasn't a binary choice. They got three votes, which was all about the guys, but I don't know, this was just like this quiz was out of nowhere for me.
That's strange on so many levels. First, only three people voting. That's the same number of people who sat out the challenge. And also, I don't know, I guess maybe they all thought guys were like, they need to eat more so, and so they need the nachos in their big buff bodies. I'm not entirely sure on the thinking of those three people.
Yeah, but we had people from both genders sitting out, which was entirely possible. So why was this a binary choice given in this poll? Maybe that's why only three people voted, because they were just like, what? So I like to think that's why it got so little engagement. All right. Well, let's get to some questions. We have so many questions for you, PK. Vanessa Yanktonia asks, how can Dante get people to work with him moving forward? Can he come back from burning bridges?
I think the only thing Dante can do right now is to approach Rob and maybe like give some information, you know, because information is power in the game of Survivor. So maybe because Rob is in charge right now, right in the game, he could perhaps approach Rob, give Rob some, I don't know what information he has, but he could earn Rob's trust in some way. I don't know if that's going to work, but that's what he could do. Or he could go to other people and do the same thing, like a few other people, and maybe make them realize that, okay, guys, look, Rob is looking really, really strong right now, and no one in the jury is not going to work for Rob. So let's just eliminate him right now while we could.
Mm.
You know, I think that's the best thing that Dante can do right now. Or just throw Mava under the bus, and that'll just probably buy him one more day.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, I do think the path he could take honestly here is the honesty path. I think he could say, hey, I'm someone who has never lied about the way that I voted. Who else can say that here? Maybe he can, you know, try to misconstrue the stuff that happened at the watering hole at the merge fees by being like, hey, Jacques and Quibus wanted to turn on you guys, just so you know. I think he has some outs to take. The issue is just the way he delivers that information and just the stigma against him. You know, I think he could very easily be the person who, in a vacuum, like you said, Shannon, be like, use me. Not only do I vote loyally, but I have a very small chance of winning the game at this point because I like to piss people off. Whether or not people will bite at that and whether or not he'll actually use that as a lure, I'm not entirely sure, but he does have those outs. I do not think it's game over for him right now at this moment.
Yeah. Well, tangential to that, Jason Gates, who is my brother slash intern, asks, who is best placed to lead the Blue Must Fall resistance against Saula slash Rob this season? So I think we all kind of think for Rob, there might be a demise coming, but is it Jacques? Is it Fipe? Like, who do you guys see is going to be leading that? PK?
No, I think it's absolutely Nicole.
Mm.
I think Nicole is in the perfect position right now, especially because, you know, she got rid of Nathan and she's basically not really that trusted. And because she's the one person that mentioned the fact that Robinson is in a super position right now, I think. And, you know, she's shown that she can play the game. She's a good social player, a very, very good social player. So I think she can lead the Rob's Dynasty Must Burn movement.
I think it might be Mike, which is weird considering that, like, this is like an et tu Brute, et tu Mikey moment, if you will, when he does end up stabbing Rob in the back. Maybe it's going to be a thing where, like, you know, Rob got rid of, you know, Mike's number one because Jeff got rid of his number one. And so Mike will now has his own sort of little revenge path. But to your point, PK, as well connected Nicole is socially, and Mike's even more so. To the point where you have now, we're two for two on jurors saying, like, yeah, I want to vote for Mike. I mean, he's just a good guy who gets along well with everybody. I can understand what he's doing. So I think if there is one person to rally enough people together to overthrow Rob, I think it could be Mike, considering that Mike might be, besides Doral, maybe the least suspecting person that Rob would, you know, think would be plotting against him.
For me, I think Fipe and Jacques coming together, especially Jacques, could be someone who's going to wake up to the fact that Rob needs to go, who isn't really so connected to Rob individually like we see with so many of these other players. Basically, all the other players, we just see him have, like, you know, 6 degrees of separation or 2 degrees of separation through Fipe. We haven't seen much of their extreme connection. So he's someone I think is smart enough to kind of want to take down Rob, and if the Misfits are really a thing, you know, maybe Fipe and Darao as well. But they have their own connections to Rob, and that's the thing I think about Rob, is that the people who are really insular to the Alliance, like, you know, Nicole and Steffi and Fipe, and then even the outsiders, now Darao, Kubus, Mike, are all people we've seen build individual connections with him. It's actually amazing how connected he is. So whoever does, if they even do bring him down, it'll be a massive, massive effort, just because he has insulated himself despite what a threat he is to enormous degrees, which I find super impressive. Sheldon Coopin asks you, PK. PK can clearly empathize with Mike for voting for his bromance, but could this vote be a downward pivot for Mike, you know, comparing it to the way that your game went after you voted up Kevin?
Yeah, things could turn against him because, you know, he voted against Schiff. So, like, the same way how it happened with me, how people were like, okay, this guy voted for Tim Bernards and he had to explain myself, I had to come up with a story. But for him, it was open, it was in his lines. I don't know how it's going to work. I mean, things could actually work in his favor because he's actually showing that he's a trustworthy person and is willing to vote with his alliance. So I think, instead of it being to his detriment, I think it's actually something good for him. It's positive. It's making him look like a trustworthy ally.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't love Mike having to go around and look so pained in voting out Jeff and have no real power to change that. That's why he wasn't in Chizzy consideration for me. But the fact that he's still really well into this alliance, that he has, you know, social connections, he does have room to make moves, and he has Jeff now on the jury actually campaigning for him, and that he was able to send him out and still retain that, is actually also really impressive. So I still see a lot of value in his game.
It reminds me a bit of, like, Survivor Vanuatu, when we see that epic confessional of Chris Doherty voting out Sarge and being like, I have to do this to, you know, continue. Granted, I think Chris was in a very different position than Mike was, but I think it's very similar in, like, acknowledging the situation that you're in, making a move that you need to, but still simultaneously, like, earning the respect of that person. It's a very tricky needle to thread, but I feel like Mike was able to do so here. And I just feel like he's so socially insulated that I can't imagine anyone trying to target him anytime soon. You know, he sort of has Rob as a meat shield right now, which I think is very interesting.
I think that what it comes down to is, like, how genuine you seem to be. You know, like, why does Jeff go kind of not thinking great things about Nicole, but still being on board with Mike, who was arguably a bigger betrayal that he wrote his name down. I mean, the fact that Jeff was asking him stuff and Mike was being super vague and saying, I really don't feel like it's good for you, but not giving him the details. And then Dante ran and gave Jeff the details was just this crazy thing to happen for me. But he doesn't help Jeff here. You know, obviously he can't, but he does vote for him. And Jeff is still campaigning for him on the jury, and I really just think it comes down to how genuine you come across. You know, he said Mike had tears in his eyes and he was clearly really upset about it, and Jeff can obviously feel that even if he does feel betrayed, whereas someone like Nicole, it doesn't feel genuine from her, so he goes to the jury just like mad about how that all went down with her.
Yeah. And also looking at the voting confessionals, which I am a little saddened that, you know, Rob did not write down "my name is Jeff" to signal to Dante. I thought we were going to get another, you know, Matthew Anus moment that was never going to come to be. Darrow did say "my name is Jeff" in the voting confessional, which Darrow, that doesn't count, buddy. I'm sorry to tell you that, but that's not what he meant. But Nicole said in her voting confessional, like, I had a deal with you, but I had a deal with people earlier. It's interesting to see how she sort of couches that versus Mike, who did literally the opposite, and to see how people value the alliances they make early on versus the ones that they make later. You know, PK, I think you unfortunately ended up falling because of the alliances people made later over the ones that they made earlier. So it just depends on, you know, what people are going to value, or what have you done for me lately versus, you know, we've been together since day one.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Ryan Stanley asks, Felix trusts Jacques as far as he can throw him, which is admittedly not very far. And Jeff can't trust Jacques as far as he can throw him, which is admittedly pretty far. So who trusts Jacques less? This is like a weird math problem. I did say at the time that Felix can definitely throw Jacques really far. I mean, I feel like Felix can throw Jacques way further than Jeff can. And I also am like, these two things were said in confessional. So people are just having these visions of throwing Jacques around the beach, like independently of each other. And also, you know, Felix and Jeff didn't meet. So why are people thinking so much about throwing Jacques around?
Here's the confessional that Jeff said specifically.
I don't trust that little man as far as I can throw him, although I could probably throw him pretty far.
I love your sound clip. I love this idea of Jacques tossing. I think that should be like in South Africa season 8, that should be like we fly Jacques in and the reward challenge is to throw Jacques as far as possible. And the winner gets pizza.
I love Jacques tossing. It's true. I mean, as I've said, he's weighed down by idols and advantages. Like, I think it would be really difficult.
But paint.
Yes. When is that paint coming out? Ever?
It's not coming out. I think it's going to be at the reunion, like a year after the fact. He still has paint in his hair. I mean, PK, I can't remember. You guys didn't do the paint thing, right? For your swap, you just drew buffs.
No. We had the eggs. Remember, we had the eggs in the baskets, and we had to braid the eggs, and whatever paint color came out the eggs, that was your tribe.
Yeah, but so how did you feel about John smearing it all over his head?
Well, I kind of smeared all over my face, so I have no grounds to be to be judging Jacques.
The paint that they got smeared with last episode in the challenge must have been slightly different, because they all got completely drenched with that, but it's still not as prominent as Jacques' purple paint. And I have to say, loving the Princess Leia buns as well. Like, that was a real look, and I think that was a really good look for Jacques.
And he also did like a pageant way when he was coming in on the boat from iOS. Like, I'm loving Jacques and Quibus are like the two sassiest people on the season so far. And it's great. I think the stuff they had last time was more like dyed water than it was actual paint. Considering that when they washed up in the ocean, like poor Dante was not dyed blue. You know, he was not looking like a Smurf, thankfully, the rest of his time on the season.
I would have enjoyed that. That would have given, you know, that would have made him the picture of Blue Must Fall. I mean, he was literally falling off that platform. He was Blue Must Fall personified, you know? So I love it. All right. Question I have here for you, PK. Fiona Wall-Minimi wants to ask you who from this cast you would most like to take on in a boxing match. For charity, obviously. We're making it a thing. Who in this cast you want to hug with your fist?
You know, because I'm tired of taking on people that are bigger than me, it'll have to be someone that I can throw as far as I can trust.
Letitia?
How really put it is, it has to be Jacques.
The Letitia one would be fun, though. I feel like that's a fun rivalry. But no, Jacques tossing is a thing. So we've now made it a thing where three three different people are now talking about how much they want to throw him. And he seems like a perfectly lovely guy. Like, this is not a good thing.
And Chuck seems like he's a great person, you know? I don't know why everybody just wants to throw him around. He seems like a very sweet guy.
Everyone has an urge to throw him. Can't be explained, but it's not a thing.
I wouldn't fight Dante in water because he's a water bender, so there's no way I'd want to save him in water.
I wouldn't fight Dante.
Oh, I love this. Dante is Aang from Avatar: The Last Airbender. He's now woken up and now he's ready to you know, master all the elements and truly come into his own against Rob, who leads the Fire Nation.
Oh yes.
Well, now that we've gone to the end of the podcast, I have to unilaterally decide that the hashtag is hashtag Jacques tossing. Jacques, the name Jacques is in every hashtag we've done this season. It's the most punnable name.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I love the themes that we've done. They've all come from Mike as well. Mike is just filled with Jacques puns and sound clips. Like, that's where Mike is at the moment. But PK, thanks so much for coming on and joining us. Where can people find you on social media to follow everything that you're doing at the moment?
Oh, guys, thank you so much for having me. This was a lot of fun. And if you guys want to follow me, if the listeners want to follow me, it's at Hilton_PK. That's on Twitter. That's on Instagram. That's just basically anywhere. Hilton_PK.
Yeah. And Mike, well, you can always follow Mike at @MikeBlueType. You can follow me at Shannon Gates. And Mike, what are you doing in the podcast world?
So we just finished up our Stranger Things episodic coverage. Myself and Josh Wigler had a supersized finale recap, but we are not stopping there. We have plenty of surprises to come as we lead up to a brand shiny new, really exciting project in the coming months that I will be hopefully dropping on you guys in terms of an announcement in the coming weeks. I'm also covering Big Brother as well. Myself and Liana Boris have reopened the doors of the RHAP B&B to talk some Big Brother 21 with Matt Liguori. I'm also covering that for Parade as well in terms of Exit Press. But yeah, PK, I'm so happy that you came on to talk with us. You really were a standout character from an entertainment perspective, especially from last season. So to get to your thoughts on, you know, everything, I can only imagine how weird it's been for you to watch all this happen considering what you were going through only a year ago. So it's great for you to come on and sort of give your reflection and some bold predictions. So we'd love to get bold predictions here on the podcast. So I'm happy you joined in on the fun.
Oh, thank you so much, Mike. It was amazing. I really hope this season is going to fire up. And as much as you guys are saying there won't be any idle trains, look, I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful.
Yeah, people are going to be going to rocks. It's all happening. But no, I'm still really loving the season, even though I've said season 6, one of my favorite seasons of all time, pretty much untoppable globally anywhere. So those are high standards, but I'm really enjoying the season as well. And, you know, another Survivor season is starting this week. Australian Survivor is starting on Wednesday, July 24. So let me know if you need help watching that. Anyone can slide into my DMs on pretty much any platform and I will help you out. I did a preview podcast of what we know so far about it. I think there'll be a cast announcement soon, so that knowledge may grow. But within the last week, the knowledge that we had, Liana Boris and I did, you know, give a preview, which was a lot of fun. And I'll be starting my weekly recaps this week with the great Stephen Fishback, and we'll be doing exit interviews. There's so much going on, especially with Survivor South Africa. I'll be watching a lot of Survivor. I'll be talking about a lot of Survivor. It's pretty much going to be my entire life. So you guys should subscribe to the International Survivor Hapups feed, and that means you'll never miss a podcast, which we always think is important. And next week, the podcast will be unmissable because we'll have your on and off ally PK, Annalise Sainsbury, as our guest to talk about Survivor South Africa episode 11. So I'm super pumped up about that.
Nice. I can't remember. Love her.
PK, was Annalise the kangaroo? Was she the lizard? I can't remember what animal you gave her on your way out.
I think she might have been the kangaroo. I think so.
A very prominent timing with the premiere of Australian Survivor.
Yeah. Well, you were very Australian with your animals, yeah. PK. Why was it the snake, the kangaroo, and the koala? You must have been thinking about Australia when you gave people those titles.
Because I knew I'm going to be having a podcast with Shannon Gates later on that season, so you know, I had to preempt it.
It worked.
PK playing fifth-dimensional chess on his way out. Only PKOS could do that.
That's why we asked you on, because I'm like, wow, this guy loves Australian animals, so he must love Australia, so he must love me. It makes a lot of sense.
It makes a lot of sense.
All right, well, then I'll be the snake. You guys can be the kangaroo and the koala. This was a lot of fun with the three of us talking about it. So thank you so much again, PK, for coming on to do that. Mike, thank you as always. Thanks to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Thanks you guys for all of you listening. And we'll see you next week with Annalise. Bye.